We're joined this morning by Dr. Gloria Walther, who is a doctor in early childhood development, also studies family life development, and has a preschool. So you've got your hands full. Now you're also as an author putting together a four-volume series on children called Eye to Eye. That's the main heading. Doctor, what was it that got you interested in becoming an early childhood educator, understanding the workings of the mind of the preschooler and the young child?
Oh, Bruce, what a great question. I actually was awakened. I've always loved young children, but I was awakened at Ohio State when I took my first child development course. And I was with the children many years ago. They wanted to show a film, and they turned the lights up to show the old-fashioned film. And one of the children near me just freaked out and was screaming and screaming and screaming. So I grabbed him, held him tight, and flipped the light on. And so in doing that, then I calmly, quietly whispered in his ear that the reason we wanted to turn the light out was because we couldn't show the film to the children unless the light was turned off, because there was a little light in the projector, and it would show the film onto the screen, but we couldn't see it unless the light was off. But we weren't going to turn the light off. No one was going to turn the light off but this child. So I said, whenever you're ready, if you'd like to see the film, would you please turn the light off? And he just took a nice deep breath, smiled at me, and flipped the switch. And that was so revealing to me, because I saw that a child was in distress, and I quickly swooped him up and held him so he'd feel safe, flipped the light on to take care of his concern, and then spoke to him about the reason we were turning the light off, and then gave him the power. And so that has actually been my universal truth for dealing with children and conflict and parent issues and all these things for the last 40 years, because everything stems from that. So when children are feeling safe and they understand the reasoning, then they can have some power and choice in the matter, then you have a very assured child. And that's basically what I put my philosophy on from that experience.
And the titles of your books have the eye to eye, which
yes.
I look at meaning we see eye to eye. That means we kind of come to an agreement. But there's also that talk of eye to eye when they say, if you're dealing with a child, kind of get down to their level. See what the world looks like.
You can get down, or you can get up, Bruce. Either way, whatever it takes to get on eye level with your child. And this was a discovery I made visiting a school one time. And I was just quietly watching the children. They were doing some Mother's Day cards or some special cards. And there was a very young 3.5-year-old child just very carefully drawing a circle, black, 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 black circle, very carefully. And then he went to the right of that circle and did a second very, very dark, dark, dark circle circling the pencil over and over and over. And then he put the pencil down. And he looked at me and smiled. And I said, "Can you tell me about your picture?" And the child said to me, "Oh, that's my mommy." And I said, "Gosh, what part of your mommy is that?" And he pointed to his nostrils. And that really was so, just awakened me to how adults talk to children when they don't go eye level with the child. What the child is looking up at is basically two nostrils. And so when I this, or I taught at UCLA for about 17 years, and I taught all the teachers, I'd always tell this story, drawing the nostrils on the board, and then saying what the child said, "That's my mommy." And forevermore, once you hear that story, once you understand what the child is saying, you just drop to your knees each time you want to talk to a child, or you lift them up, or you sit down in a chair and look at them directly. But when you're looking eye to eye, it's not only physically more comforting to them and more like you're really listening, but it also showing respect. And when you show a child respect, you get respect back. And I think that's very important.
Well, let's talk about the reason for these handbooks. We always talk about when you have a child that nobody gives you a handbook. And I guess maybe this is sort of the closest thing, or a little bit of an insight. Talk about the four parts of it and how they kind of differ and develop as the child develops.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it says handbook because, as you say, you know, we're not taught about life, we're not taught about death, we're not taught about a lot of things. People avoid certain subjects. But in this collection of books, It's just a collection of things that have happened at my preschool. I've been teaching at a preschool for 40 years. And all these different things come up, different kinds of conflicts, different kinds of concerns. And this is very much a collection of stories that are kind of charming, kind of interesting, and also leave you with a really good idea of how to handle your own children or how to deal with situations that are coming up in families that are very difficult for families to deal with, whether it be death, whether it be separation or a change in location. All sorts of things happen to families. And change is really, really hard to deal with for any human being. But then you complicate that with a very young child, and parents are at loss sometimes as to what to do. So in this collection of books, eye-to-eye books, it just talks about different situations and how I handle them at school. And what the parents at my school are telling me is after they've read them, then they go into other situations that are brand new. They handle them perfectly for their family, and they come back to me and tell me the story, and I go, you know, that story is not in the book. That's your story that you have gleaned from this collection of stories. So the parents are saying to me, I feel like I'm a better parent because I stop now and I take a moment, and that moment provides such a connection with my child that I see a change. I see a happier child, a more content child, a more self-awareness, just a child who's more in control of themselves and have better ideas, solutions for problems and stuff. So when the children are included in these discussions, then they're very much, they take it to their own person. They see the value in it, and then they go, okay, I'm going to do this the next time. And they really make a commitment to that. And it just makes life more pleasant.
We're talking today with Dr. Gloria Walther about early childhood and the kids. We talk about children are our future. How is it that we're preparing them? What kind of things do you want to preach about that in regards to getting the child set in those what they call formative years so that as a young person, as an adult, and so on, they're what we want in a society?
We do. We want a child who's initiates their own work. We want a child who has persistence. We want a child who has ideas for solutions. So all day long, what I'm asking the children, when there's a little bit of a bump or something's about to break or get disruptive or get, a problem, they'll intercede and I'll go, excuse me, does anyone have a solution for this problem? And then the children go from a distressful situation to, gosh, I've got an idea. What if we try this? And then another child says, well, I've got another idea. And then we use those ideas to make changes. And then we will ask the children, you know, if that's something that they can do, and what will they do the next time? And when a child says, even if they're three, the next time I'm going to look where I'm going. That way I won't step on my friend's work. And the other child says, well, the next time I'm going to do my work on a table so no one would ever walk on the table. So that's a good idea. So, for example, if a child had been doing a puzzle, another child walk on the puzzle, then they're both kind of like they get into a bit of a tiff. Then I'll ask them, what's a better idea? And when they come up with, I'll do my work on a table, and the other child says, I'll look where I'm going, you can even take that a step further by saying, can you two take this puzzle to a table and do it together, which then leads them back to friendship. So it's preparing them in many ways to go into the world and be social, emotional, mature beings and come up with ideas that are solutions.
Where do you stand on the issue? They talk about helicopter parenting, you know, parents raise the child, they think everything's working fine, you have to release it out into the world, you have to be a part of it, yet you're still kind of attached. How do you kind of try to distance yourself and allow the child to grow on their own, but yet know that they're supported at home?
Well, the independent person, isn't that important? I think it's actually critical that we become independent, but children want to be independent, but they can't be until they get that secure base. So I think that the formative years, 3 to 5, are the years that you really spend, I'm here for you, I would like to help you with a good decision, and I'd like to help you in ways that will support you to be free-thinking and to go forward. So basically the basic needs. For example, if a child, one of the families was moving, and the child had been very happy and content and easygoing until they found out about the move, and then they sort of went off the deep end and they were having a lot of trouble. So I sat with the mom, and she actually ended up coming up with this, where she would hold out her hand, and her son would place his hand within her hand, and she'd hold one finger of his and say, "Are you hungry?" Then she'd hold the next finger, "Or are you thirsty?" She'd hold the next finger, "Or do you need to have some exercise? Do you need to run?" Or she'd hold the next finger and say, "Do you actually need a rest?" And then he took the last finger and said, "No, Mommy, I need a hug." So then as they moved forward in their transition and their move, he began to take his own hand in his own hand, saying, "Am I hungry? Am I thirsty? Do I need to run? Do I need a rest? Or do I need a hug?" And so he was learning very early. He was 3 at the time, and he was learning to self-regulate and to figure out what he wanted and what he needed, and he became independent in that way. So he knew she was there backing him, but he could figure out what it was he needed by listening to his body and to his mind.
Where does a parent get a knowledge like that, to do this whole thing with a finger, to talk to a child like that, to be able to bring that out? You talk about these as being stories, and sometimes I think they sound more like parables or fables or something to that effect.
The collection of books, the Eye to Eye collection, is really kind of similar to Soup for the Soul. So you know how you read those stories and you get a moral at the end. We don't really get a moral at the end. My stories are more like you give the story, and then the people can take what they need from that story to use in their own personal lives. And so, for example, I'll give you a negative of one is 2 children were really, really fiercely angry at each other, and they were white-knuckled, and they were just about to pound each other, and they interceded, and I just held up my finger and said, "How many candles do you need to blow out before your heart is ready to receive love?" And this child looked at me and said, "I need 17 candles." I said, "You're really upset. I can see that." He said, "Yeah." So I held my finger, and he just blew. And I said, "1. And he blew again, and I said, 2. We got to 17, and I looked at him and said, "Is your heart ready to receive love?" He goes, "I'm going to need a couple more candles." Anyway, in doing that, he was able to blow off his anger and his steam, and he was able to move from the emotional side of the brain to the intellectual side of the brain. And that's where children do the problem solving, and that's where they can find solutions. So getting them from just being raw emotion to figuring out a solution. Another quick one is that if a child gets hurt, we make sure they're okay. But then if we know they're just crying and they need to be sort of moved forward, I'll just say, "What shape ice would you like to help you?" And then we have all these different trays of ice at school that have different shapes. And they'll go from really sobbing and hard crying to, "I want the whale shape." And they'll be already switched to the intellectual side, not denying anything at all on the emotional side, but getting to the intellectual side in order to be able to cope and to think and to be able to grapple with what it is that's concerning them.
Because many times when there's a crisis or screaming going on, sometimes the adult will also kind of join into that screaming, which you obviously would say doesn't really solve anything. How do we know to take that breath to kind of realize this moment, as they say, this too shall pass kind of a thing?
Well, I think if parents can remember, or teachers too can remember, that if you have a fire and you put air on it, you're going to have a bigger fire. So instead, take a nice deep breath. And actually, the truth is, when a child is screaming at you, or screaming in general, if you talk softly to them and calmly and just hold them gently, or stand back if they need that as well, but the softer you talk, the more quickly they'll stop to listen to what it is you're saying. So it's try it once. Just try it once. It's pretty effective. And so anyway, yeah, in this collection of books, there's all sorts of stories like that, and very helpful to parents. And I think it's really important just to take a moment and, without distractions, get down on your knees or lift your child up and really look them in the eye and give them your attention for one moment, and you'll see it's really, really profound.
Does that work if you have multiple children? You kind of have to divide that whole thing up, or is it sort of
because Bruce, I have 21 children here at a time.
I don't.
So yeah, it really does. You know, what can happen is the child that's in your, you know, the first child that's upset, the first couple of children, or if it is, and you have them right in front of you, and then if another person comes up that has a different thing, then you hold your finger up and say, "You're next. I'm going to listen to your word." Or if you're able to reach out, touch the second child while you're dealing with the first child or group of children, and just say, "I'm coming to you next." And then should a third situation pop up, then you've got another hand to reach over, and you're after them. So they know they're going to be dealt with. They're going to be dealt with with my complete attention, but they have to wait.
Wow.
So that helps also develop persistence.
This also prepares them to go get lunch meat at the deli counter when they have to wait. You know, it's the same kind of a thing, right? I was here first. Okay, I understand. Or you go first.
Take a number.
Right, exactly.
That's a good one.
That's the way it works. Their Eye to Eye, that's the title of the series of books. If people want to get a hold of these handbooks to kind of maybe fix things, or if they're expecting, you know, somebody to prepare, where's a good place to get these, and how do they find out more about you and these books?
Amazon.com, and you just look under Gloria Walther, or the words Eye to Eye.
Eye to Eye. Our guest today has been Dr. Gloria Walther. Appreciate the stories and time this morning, and thanks for what you do. It's great.
Thank you, Bruce, very much.